This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To talk more about the Pirates, we welcome in our pal from the Trib, Kevin Gorman. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Doing great, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Hey, where did the terminology Gormy the Owl come from?
Oh, Starkey. I sat next to Joe Starkey for, I don't know how many, 12, 15 years at the Trib. And, once he gives you a nickname, he never lets you hear the end of it. So it was just one of those that stuck.
It could be worse because there was a young man who used to work here. I don't think he does, but Starkey just called him Dr. Cornfetter, and nobody knows why. But I think Owl is certainly better than that. But all right, let's get into it. The Pirates begin their season tomorrow in Miami, Kevin. I want to start with this Jared Jones news that came out here today, and obviously more information, it sounds like, coming out tonight as well from Todd Tomczyk. 6 weeks he's not able to pick a baseball up. I suppose that is good news, right, Kevin, from what was anticipated there. But at the same time, what's the realistic timetable on from right now when we could actually see Jared Jones on, say, a mound at PNC Park?
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario, given that the alternative probably is a torn UCL, which requires Tommy John surgery, and you're out for 14 to 16 months before you can really resume baseball activities, which means the Pirates would have lost Jared Jones in his prime for possibly two full seasons, maybe a year and a half. In this case, being that it's a UCL sprain, that Jared Jones, if things go as Todd Tomczyk has told us in the past, and he didn't say this today. I'm not in Miami, but he didn't say this to reporters today. He didn't put a timetable on it. But it's my understanding, especially with pitchers, for every 1 week down, it's 2 weeks recovery. So if he's out for six, that means we're talking 12-week recovery. We won't see Jared Jones in April, May, June. So I would think sometime, either right before or right after the All-Star break, you would think after the All-Star break would be kind of the optimal time for him to come back in the second half. And that's if all goes well. That's if there's no setbacks in the, the shutdown, if there's no setbacks in the recovery, if there's no setbacks in the rehab assignment, which, that would be required as well. So just, the time that he's building back up, you hope that, that Jared Jones does well. If he rehabs the way that he pitches, this is a guy who's going to attack it. I think that's the one thing. We're talking about a good athlete. But sometimes good athletes have a mentality that they want to attack it and don't have the patience to deal with the rehab. But, you know, I think it's the best case scenario you could get given the circumstances. But I also would warn that there was something similar. I'm not going to say it's exact, but something similar happened with Jamison Tyone. The Pirates held him out for a while trying to get him to recover, and he ended up having Tommy John surgery anyway. So when you're dealing with a UCL sprain or strain or tear, it's not a good thing. We're talking about the elbow, and it's a fragile thing, especially when you got guys who are power pitchers who throw in triple digits. But best case scenario would see Jared Jones after the All-Star break, and hopefully the Pirates could also get Johan Oviedo back sometime around then, which would allow them to maybe do some different things with the guys they have in the rotation. You know, perhaps it allows the Pirates to move a Carmen Majinski back into the bullpen, maybe even a Bailey Falter and or an Andrew Heaney. It might allow the Pirates to trade from a position of depth, given that they've got some really bright, you know, young arms at AAA Indianapolis. So if there was a position that the Pirates had the depth to withstand this, it's that starting pitcher. But if there was a starting pitcher you didn't want this to happen to, I would say number one would be Paul Skenes, and number two would be Jared Jones.
Yeah, in the meantime, in the immediate here, what are the answers for their rotation? What do they do in his spot every fifth day?
Yeah, Carmen Majinski is going to step in. He's a guy who, at the start of training, or I guess at the end of last season, when he had his exit meetings with the Pirates front office and coaching staff, that he, you know, said, "Hey, you know, I've never wanted to close the door on being a starting pitcher." He was drafted as a starter out of South Carolina. He was a competitive balance pick, so he's number 31 overall, essentially a first round pick. And you know, the Pirates had converted him to a reliever. I thought he did really good. A really good job in the bullpen, and especially in some high leverage situations. But this is a guy who wanted to be a starter and has a full repertoire of pitches and added several pitches over the offseason. He got stretched out. He pitched 3 innings in one game. He pitched 4 innings at Pirate City in an outing. So this is a guy who I could see him going out and pitching 4 or 5 innings in his first outing, or I could see him piggybacking with somebody like maybe a Caleb Ferguson, who also is stretched out. It gives the Pirates a little more depth in their bullpen that, you know, that they could take one guy from their bullpen and use him in their rotation, as opposed to you know, bringing up a Thomas Harrington or somebody like that who has never pitched in the majors and also would have had to been added to the 40-man roster. So they went with the guys they had. It could be a short-term solution. It may be not be long before we see maybe a Mike Burrows, who made his debut last September at Yankee Stadium, or a Thomas Harrington or Bubba Chandler or somebody like that, you know, come up and join the rotation if the Pirates, if Majinski doesn't do well enough, or if the Pirates feel like they need to go with a kind of a tried and true starter as opposed to someone who's kind of a, you know, returning to a starting for the first time in a couple seasons. But it also wouldn't surprise me to see the Pirates go to a 6-man rotation early in the season to maybe preserve some arms and find, you know, if there's a day off, maybe say like next Wednesday, where there's a day off the following day before the home opener, that maybe they go with a bullpen game and they let a Caleb Ferguson serve as the opener and just go straight bullpen and spread things out. That remains to be seen what the Pirates will do, but they've shown some creativity in how they use their fifth and sixth starters in the past.
Talking with Kevin Gorman from the Trib. Kevin, when you look at this team as opposed to last year, I've heard a couple of people say that it is a deeper team than they were a year ago. Do you agree with that sentiment? And if so, which ways are they deeper?
Well, I mean, I think they're deeper. It's just a matter of whether they're better. And they're deeper in the sense that, you know, last year their backup middle infielder was Alika Williams and their starting second baseman was Jared Triolo. You know, that's one way they're deeper. You know, bringing in Adam Frazier, which has not been very well received by Pirates fans, at least not on social media, but getting him for $1.525 million is essentially what they paid Miguel Andujar 2 years ago, and he spent the majority of the season in the minors. It's a bargain deal. If Frazier is even somewhat productive, it's a bargain deal for having a guy that you know you can count on. It can play second base, third base, first base, left field, right field, and maybe even shortstop in a pinch, that you know you have a veteran who's been in the playoffs the past few postseasons. You know, Tommy Pham is the same type of thing. Guy's been on 10 teams in 12 seasons, but he's been in the postseason a lot and has a lot of experience. I think the depth that they added to the bullpen has helped with Ferguson and Tim Meza. you know, and Justin Lawrence, to getting him from the Rockies this spring. I don't think they've made big splash signings. I think it's pretty obvious that they spent, you know, less than $20 million in free agency. But I do feel like this team has more depth, that you're not seeing guys who I think a lot of people want to see some of these rookies come up. And I think the Pirates are kind of going with veterans, saying you don't necessarily win with rookies, although, you know, Jared Jones and Paul Skeens are certainly the exception.
When you start looking at their lineup, let's say tomorrow, can we play a little game where you fill out the lineup card as if you're Derek Shelton for tomorrow for us?
Yeah, the big question is whether, you know, what they're going to do at the leadoff spot. But if, let's just say, you know, they go with Tommy Pham, who's been there. You know, you have Pham in left. You have Brian Reynolds in right. You have O'Neill Cruz in center. That's your top three. Joey Bart playing catcher, batting fourth. I would imagine Andrew McCutchen is going to probably bat fifth and be the designated hitter. Key Brian Hayes at third base would bat sixth. And then you get down to the last couple spots. You're going to have, I would imagine you're going to have Nick Gonzalez, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, and Jared Triolo. Possibly could be at first base, or they could go with Indy Rodriguez just because he's a switch hitter and they're facing Alcantara. So that would probably be the lineup to me. You know, with Skeens on the mound, and I could see them going with Andy over Triolo just to get another left-handed bat in the lineup, because the Pirates do kind of like to go as much as possible, go left-right, left-right, or right-left-right-left. Left, right, left. So that would be my projection. I can't see them doing anything different than that. I think it would be interesting if they wanted to, they could throw Jack Sawinski out there and put him in left field instead of Pham, but I don't think you'd do that to a veteran. I think you'd give him, you know, kind of the, this is the guy that you signed to be the starter. He's been the starter all spring, and you're not going to worry about the pitching matchup because you got a veteran out there. And Sawinski, you know, as much as he had a good spring, he was a wild card.
Can you take me through the decision to put Andy Rodriguez at first base? How much experience does he have heading into opening day at first base? And I suppose, what are realistic expectations for how that guy is going to be able to handle that spot? And then how also do they, you know, work him in behind the plate? How is that going to break down with Joey Bart then?
Yeah, you know, I fully expect to see it didn't surprise me that Andy made the team. I always felt like the Pirates had that in their back pocket, was that they knew that Andy could play first, that he can also play second. He's got a little bit of experience in the outfield. He's played all those positions in the minors. He's very much a catcher first, and I think out of all their catchers, he probably has the brightest future behind the plate of the four guys that they have, with Bart, Andy, Henry Davis, and Jason DeLay, all have major league experience. Andy has the best arm of those guys. I think the Pirates were trying to get a lot of guys through there at first base to see if they could find somebody that could really be the stopgap until Spencer Horwitz returns from that right wrist surgery. And he looks like he's, you know, several weeks, you know, weeks away. It's not going to be anytime soon. Maybe month, you know, maybe more than a month away. With Andy, you know, the guy's a fantastic athlete, you know, has great versatility, and I think it should be a seamless transition for him. He's not your ideal first baseman, given that he's 6 foot, maybe, you know, but so is Spencer Horwitz. He's the same size as him. But certainly he's a guy that can do that and gives them the switch hitting aspect to complement Triolo. Triolo's, you know, a guy that no matter where you put him, he is terrific defensively. And so first base is probably the worst of his positions, yet he's still better than average probably. So that's probably the decision making it, you know, behind it is that they always knew that if it came down to it, that Andy Rodriguez could play first. I think they were hoping that they wouldn't have to resort to that. But I do think at some point we're going to probably see Joey Bart doing some DHing. I can't imagine Andrew McCutchen's going to play more than 100 games at DH this year, just given how his body's broken down in the years past from overuse, I think, and that he's 38 years old in his 17th season. I could see Henry Davis being up at some point. I'm not sure the Pirates want to carry three catchers, but you know, there's always injuries associated with that position just because of sometimes because of foul balls and the physicality that goes along with that position. But I could see the Pirates using Henry Davis or Joey Bart at DH as well and getting Andy behind the plate, maybe on a more regular basis than your typical backup catcher.
Speaking of guys getting banged up, obviously the story now for Key Brian Hayes has become injuries and the inability to stay healthy. Kevin. How big of a factor is that heading into this year? How has he looked to you when you've watched him? And is it one of those things where you don't really know when it's going to happen, but it seems like it probably will happen at some point where he's going to go down for a period of time?
Let me not sound too optimistic here, Josh, with the Pirates. I don't want to sound like an apologist, but if you took a Pirates team that won 76 games in 2023 and you told everybody they're going to win 76 games and they're not going to really have much from their team MVP, that's what happened last season. You know, in 2023, they won 76 without O'Neill Cruz. He only played 9 games. Well, Ke'Bryan Hayes played 96 games, but he was not at full health for much of that time. It reflected at the plate. He did not hit the ball very well. His numbers were way down after leading the team in doubles and having career highs in home runs and RBIs the previous season. He's going to give you Gold Glove caliber defense. It wasn't quite that quality last year, but it's still elite. And if he can match his defense with his offense and even come somewhat close, and defensively, I think he's a platinum glove type of guy. I think he should have multiple Gold Gloves at this stage of his career, and I think he should have at least one platinum glove. I feel like he's kind of gotten robbed on those things because of the aura around Nolan Arenado at third base. But if Ke'Bryan Hayes can give you league average batting and give you 15 homers and 60 or 70 RBIs and be a solid bat for the Pirates, that can be a major difference maker for this team, given the pitching they have, given that they have guys like Cruz and Reynolds, you know, and that they should have some upgrades, you know, especially with a Joey Bart, with him having him for a full season should make their lineup appreciably better. But Ke'Bryan Hayes is certainly the key to this team. I mean, I think that's where the optimism comes from the Pirates, is they're like, if they have a healthy Ke'Bryan Hayes, and that's a huge if given his injury history with the Pirates. But if the Pirates have a healthy and productive Ke'Bryan Hayes, they're a team that can be a contender, at least for the division title.
Talking with Kevin Gorman. Kevin, last thing for you. The guy that typically pitches last, David Bednar. How shaky is the ground for him right now at the closer position? He obviously struggled last year, has struggled some in the spring as well. I kind of take spring training numbers with a grain of salt, but when they're coming off a bad year the year before, maybe not so much. But how shaky is the closer position right now? And I'm assuming he's the guy that gets the first crack at it, at least.
No question he's the guy, probably because they don't really have any alternatives. It's not like last year where they had Aroldis Chapman and could turn to him in a heartbeat. You know, David Bednar is going to be able to locate the fastball. I think that's part of it is you know, it's become too hittable, and then his other pitches don't play off it as well if people can just sit on the elevated fastball. But David Bednar is still throwing in the high 90s. He still has the curveball and the splitter. So there's some good stuff there to work with. I wonder how much of it is just execution. It seems like his mechanics might have been off a little bit last season, but how much of it is really just getting that confidence back and having that bulldog mentality as a closer. That's one of the biggest keys to this season, is the Pirates had 29 blown saves last year, and David Bednar went from having a 93% save percentage to being a guy that they could not count on, especially really when it counted, you know, when they had that 15-game stretch where I think they went 3-12 in August and had a 10-game losing streak in there. They couldn't count on Colin Holderman and David Bednar. And if the back end of the bullpen can do their job and the front end can replicate what they did last year when the four starters that are returning, that's Skeens, Keller, Jones, and Bailey Falter, those four guys combined for 49 quality starts. And Skeens and Jones had 30 of them, 15 each. But if the Pirates can get to the sixth inning, they have the people back there to get them through 7, 8, 9. But those guys have to do their jobs, and they have to do it better than they did last season. So that's the thing about the Pirates, is that they have some talent there. I don't think it's the type of team that beats you on paper, but I do think that the Pirates have some talent there. There's so many – when they talk about margins, there's very little margin for error. You can't have one of the key guys not live up to his reputation or his you know, talent level. These guys all have to maximize everything for the Pirates to have a winning season. And I think they will have a winning season. I'm going to project – I haven't come up with the exact number, but somewhere like around 83 or 84 wins. The problem is that probably doesn't get you into the playoffs. They need to do better than that. But I do think this is a team that's improved over what last season's team is. And I know that's kind of hard for Pirates fans to see that potential in them. But But I do feel like this team is better when you look at the lineup, because there's only two guys, Josh, that in the projected lineup I just gave you for tomorrow, opening day lineup, only two of those guys started at the same position last year, and that's Ke'Bryan Hayes at third base and Andrew McCutchen at DH. Every other position either has a new starter or a player who's in a new position.
Yeah, great stuff, Kevin. Appreciate it, man, and enjoy opening day tomorrow. We'll talk again soon.
All right, thanks for having me, Josh. Have a good one.